part of the Course in Miracles that is more or less an overview of the Course and what the Course is really teaching and what the Course is really saying. I find that it's important to get back to the basics a lot of times with the Course in Miracles, because once a person really studies it, they get that it's not really about analyzing the Course, it's really about remembering what it's saying. So I always see myself as an official reminder. My thing is like, okay, because I see in my own life that it's working, and it's working in ways, I don't know, maybe at some level I must have accepted it at another level beyond what I've accepted it before, because the way that it's working in my life right now is phenomenal. And even if I have those things, those upsets and interesting things that come up that would normally drive you batty, I'm finding that my emotional reaction to stuff is different without me even having to try to make myself. Mm-hmm. Like in old days, it's like some crappy happened and you go, okay, what the Course say? Then you try to pretend that you don't feel what you feel, or you try to pretend you feel good when you're really upset, whatever. And that's good in the very beginning to try to remember what it's saying, but then if you keep repeating it long enough and then keep saying it when the stuff happens, there's a point that your mind accepts those ideas, and then it'll start to just automatically go to those places without you having to try to make yourself go to those places. And then how you experience that is just noticing that your emotional reactions to things are nothing like they used to be. And then once your emotional reaction shifts, then your physical reality shifts, because it starts off as an idea, then it has to become a feeling, and then at the point it becomes a feeling, that's when you see the physical change. And that's how most people get frustrated. They'll say a truth, but they don't really believe it, or it's not really accepted at an emotional level, and then they expect to see their reality shift immediately. But you can be pretty sure that the reality shift is going to come after the emotional shift. So that's why you repeat it to yourself over and over and over again, because that's how we got programmed to think the way we do already. I mean, it's like we didn't come here thinking the way we think or feeling the way we feel. That, you know, the way we think and feel is the result of how we learned and what we experienced when we were coming up. And so to make that change, we have to be willing to do the same thing now, give ourselves a different set of thoughts. But the challenge of that in America is that we're in such a high-tech society that we have been programmed to want everything to happen instantaneously. So if we study something for a week or a couple of days, or we read a couple of pages and our life doesn't change, then the process is, let me drop that, and then let me get the next latest book, and then let me read that, and if that book didn't work immediately, then let me get the next latest book. And so people just jump from one thing to another, and they think that that's enlightenment. They think that's being on the spiritual path. You know, that's just like getting about 10 different cookbooks, but never going to the kitchen and actually trying to cook anything. But now you think you're a good cook because you got a library of cookbooks. And the truth is, you still can't fix a cake because the person hasn't actually done it. So that happens a lot that I've seen over the last 30 years on the truth path, is that people get frustrated because they got a lot of cookbooks. Mm-hmm. You know, and so what this is doing when I go back through it is that it's taking me back to basics to help me understand exactly what's happening. And I'm on the preface, what it says, Roman numeral 11, which is X, and it's like a little X and a little I, right at the very beginning of the book. How's everybody? It's on Wednesday. It's usually a smaller group, so I always like to have a chance to ask people where they're at. You know, how are you all feeling today? What's up? What's up? What's up? What's going on? Give me one word check-in. How are you feeling today?
Well, better than yesterday. So yesterday was kind of a mind-attacking me day, and mm-hmm. today's, for whatever reason, is a better day. I don't know.
Interesting. Remind me to say something about that. Yeah. What about you?
I was upset emotionally, physically.
Okay. A lot of emotional and physical upsets. Mm-hmm. Okay. Remind me to say something about that.
Okay.
Remind me to say something about that. It's like when people say such parts of the Course, they kind of deal with what they said pops in my mind. What about you?
Glad to be here.
Okay. You're glad to be here today. Well, remind me to tell you something about that. See, I need to do something about that. What you mean? You glad? I need to remind you of some stuff you're supposed to be upset about. What about you, love of God?
I feel pretty calm.
You feel pretty calm and cooled out today. I feel optimistic. I feel like it's working.
I hope I get there.
Okay, and feeling like it's working doesn't mean that I don't have stuff come up. And I always like to tell people that, because sometimes they think that means that I'm happy and smiling and feeling good all the time. It doesn't mean that. I mean, just the day before yesterday, I smashed the front of my car, pulling out of my garage. And so that wasn't nothing that I felt cheerful about. But what I noticed was how I dealt with it is very different from how I would have dealt with that a long time ago, in terms of how much of my peace I was willing to give away. But when it does come up, I go ahead and feel it. Like when it does, like when I look at it, mm-hmm. You know, it's like when I approach my car and I look at it, you know, then I have to remind myself, you know, that to feel my feelings and not reject my feelings, mm-hmm. and not to be positive and not to pretend that I don't like the fact that I did it, and that I'm still innocent and that I'm only seeing the past and that it's really not who I am. And see, it's like you have to tell yourself all of it. Not just the positive. You have to tell yourself all of it, because one of the biggest ego tricks on the path is what I'm going to talk about that a lot in the classes over the next few weeks, is what I call the idealized self. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep talking about that, because I really realize that most truth students are giving their ego, are building their egos, and they think they're getting rid of their egos. They think that because they set these high ideals of always being loving, always being peaceful, always being kind, always being giving, forgiving, that that's good to want to focus on that. That's a great idea to focus on it. But the key thing to recognize is that the way your ego uses that is every time you don't feel that way, your ego beats you up and say, you know, you must not be doing it. You must not be where you should be. You come down and you slam yourself, because somehow or another you made yourself believe, if I'm doing this right, then I'll never have these kind of feelings and I'll always be this good, kind person. So that's actually making the fear and the conflict and the insecurity stronger. So people think they're doing great things and they go, ah, I know I shouldn't feel this way about being jealous, but because I should be, I've been studying the course long enough, I shouldn't be getting mad about that. Okay, that's strengthening your ego. It may sound good, like I'm really trying to be spiritual by saying that, but it's actually, it would be better to go, I don't like this, I'm not going to try to make myself like this, this is the way I feel right now, and as long as I don't physically attack, I'm not attacking. And that's what I try to tell myself. As long as I'm not physically attacking, I'm not attacking. So that doesn't mean that I can't feel angry. That doesn't feel like I can't feel sad. It doesn't mean I can't feel depressed. That's just my response to a situation that's coming up in my life right now. And that's my call for help. That's my call for love. But I'm no longer going to call being on the spiritual path, being always saying I feel fine and everything is going great. So I appreciate that, sure, the fact that you were honest and said, you know, right now I'm dealing with a lot of emotional upsets. Because most people on the path, they won't say that. You ask 90% of the people in the room, they're going to say, fine, how's everything going? Fine. You know, and that's a lie. Because if it was going fine, we'd all know it. The energy that you would be exuding from being in such a state of total ecstasy would be somehow obvious in your behavior, in your energy, in your everything. You know what I'm saying? You can't be in ecstasy and somehow or another that's not being transferred. So it's most of the time it's just trying to be positive, or thinking if I don't share it, then somehow or another it won't be as real. Now, but let me come back right behind that and say, tell people who don't know the truth, you're doing fine.
They don't want to know anyway.
They don't want to know anyway, and they also have a tendency to add more fearful energy to what you're already experiencing, because they're seeing it as real. So that's not the same as you coming in telling me that you're not feeling good today. You know, to me, that's just you releasing what's going on. Then I remember you're the Holy Son of God, and this is just going to pass, and your reality is totally spirit, and you're unlimited. So I give you a safe place to go ahead and experience or express whatever's coming up for you. You know, but a person who believes that it's all, the, you know, real, the ultimate reality, because usually they all, and then you could be over it, and every time you see them, they'll still be, are you still feeling bad about such and such? And so they're just really keeping that energy going, okay, because they really want to join in the suffering. And the Course says true empathy isn't joining in the suffering. You are suffering, so I suffer with you, and then therefore now you're suffering less. Like a lot of people in terms of the tremendous call for God happened at the university a few days ago. You know, the average person thinks that what you should do is suffer with the people that's going through that. That if you suffer with them, then you're somehow helping them. And the truth is, the way to help them is to remember the truth for them. You know, that they are strong, that it's okay to feel what you feel, but also to remember that every single one of those people were spiritual beings. Spiritual beings don't die. Spiritual beings don't die. Just because you die in a tragic way, like it's like when a person dies in a regular way, we go, oh, we feel like they might have gone to another level. They're now in heaven, or they're now in this ultimate reality. Someone dies through a tragedy, what we call a tragedy. We don't go to that spot. It's like they're dead. You know, so the only way you live after death is if you die in your sleep or in a hospital. Then you still go on to the next level. But if you do it from tragedy. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have compassion for what happened. I'm not pretending that if that had been my son or daughter that I wouldn't have had an emotional reaction to that. Of course I would have. But that's when I would need to remember the most that my children are souls, that my children are spirits, that my children are more than bodies. That's when all this spiritual study would need to be applied. Like when my mother made her transition and when my brother made his transition. It was during those times that I felt the greatest gratitude for the spiritual beliefs that I have. So it's not that the real beauty of the stuff that we're learning is in those times of tragedy, those times of unhappiness, those times of unexpected things. It's anybody can be positive and look at the spiritual side of things as long as it looks like everything's going the way they want it to go. It doesn't take any spiritual giant to say, I'm feeling great and the world is great because everything seems to be acting out the script that I've set forth that day. You know, I wanted my husband to bring me flowers, and he did. And I wanted to get my car washed, and it was washed. And I wanted my boss to give me the evening off, and he did. Oh, I'm happy. That's illusionary happiness. That's not happiness that's coming from spiritual development. That's happiness that's coming from wish fulfillment, which isn't the same as being centered in your being, where whether your boss lets you off or not, you're not going to beat yourself up all night about that. You're going to keep your peace about it. Whether my car was dented or not, I'm not going to let that determine the way that I feel for the rest of the day. Why? Because for one thing, the Course says there's no point in being angry at a fact. I love that line. So there's no point in being angry at a fact. Your car's dented. It's a fact. So, you know, you're being mad about it all day is not going to change that. That's a fact. So stop being angry at a fact. You know, what you need to do is admit that you didn't like it, like I said, and how you feel about it. And the sooner you do that, then the sooner the feeling will pass through and then the peace behind it will show up. So what we're going to do is, remember, you don't have to believe the ideas. You don't have to accept the ideas. Some of the ideas might be hard to believe. Some of the ideas might be quite startling. If you use it, you'll see that it's true. But you don't have to believe it. This is not a conversion class. I'm not trying to convert anybody over to anything. Okay? I'm going to start at the paragraph in the preface of what the Course says. I'm going to read I'm going to sum up the whole Course in three sentences. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. If it's real, it can't be threatened. If it's unreal. So you have to ask yourself, did those people exist or did they not exist? If they did exist, then they still exist. If they don't exist, they never existed from a spirit perspective, not from a body perspective. Yeah, they did drop it. Their bodies are not functioning, you know. But that's the same as saying, if my car was totaled and I survived it, I was not destroyed. My vehicle was. So without my car, I couldn't get around the way that I'm used to getting around. but I still exist. The Course would say, if your body is destroyed, then your ability to communicate in this plane is what's temporarily gone. Because it was the body that was being used in order for us to communicate and reach each other. The only reason why you can hear me right now is I'm using my body to communicate with you. So from a Course perspective, the body is a medium of communication for a spiritual being. So without your body, then it's hard for you to get a message across to people. Don't you agree? Doesn't mean you don't exist. It just means your vehicle is gone. Like without your cell phone, it's hard to talk to somebody that's not close in your physical vicinity. But it doesn't mean that they're not there and they're not capable of hearing you. You just don't have the medium for them to hear you at a distance. Well, the Course teaches that that's exactly what's true about people that appear to die, is that without the body, we think we've lost the ability to commune with them. People who don't believe that still have the ability to commune with loved ones who seem like they've lost the body. And in our society, we call them nuts. Okay, that's the spiritual term for our society, for people who say they talk to the dead. They're seen as being insane, which I think is funny, because the same people that call them insane is the same people that go to church or do their spiritual practice and say they believe in life after death and they believe in heaven and they believe in all this stuff. But then when you say you talk to Jesus, they want to lock you up. You know, but they say that, you know, it's really funny. It's like everybody claims God is real, but every time somebody said they actually talk to God, they go, you talk to God, talk to Santa Claus the other day too. You know, it's really funny how it's so easy to see how spiritual development can sometimes be more words than it's actually anything that we really believe. It's like, sometimes it appalls me how much people's spirituality is just words. There's not really any belief behind it. It's almost like somebody gave them a script when they were a child, and then they just say what they were told to say. Then there are other people, like you, or maybe like me, who, for me, it's always been something that I wanted to really get in touch with. And it didn't just start when I became an adult. It started when I was a child, because I thought I was hearing a bunch of stuff that wasn't true from the time I was a child. When I was sitting up in the church and listening to what some of the things were being said about God and the truth, and I was like looking around me going, I was like, you really believe that? You know, it's like, you really believe that? And people go, you know, and I'd ask questions, and then I was going Southern Baptist and raised Southern Baptist, and they would tell me, don't you question. Don't you dare question. And I'm like, but that don't make sense. Wait a minute, Adam and Eve were the first two people, and they had two kids, and their two kids married. Who did they marry? You don't question that. You know, what could they marry if they were the children of the first two people? You don't question. So you get every animal in the world on a boat. You don't question. And besides, who's going to clean up behind them? That's what I want to know. That's the real issue. That's what I want to know. You. Oh, yeah. Now that sounds like reality. Oh, God. I'm so glad God got a sense of humor. You know, so just quickly, I want to tune in. What were you all's individual feelings about what happened with the kids at the university and the people at the university? What was the first thing you felt? Did you go to, that's an unlimited spiritual being that just left their body? Or did you go to just the place where those people were killed and they were victims of this gunman? And it's not, I'm not judging either way, but I'm just curious. Where did you go first?
We blessed them and released them.
Everybody else, we can all talk. Yeah.
I barely have a story. I just kind of heard it from a friend of mine. But my first thought was that collective unconscious and those ideas and the shootings and the killings and that's what's kind of been happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, one more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mm-hmm. Again, I don't have the whole story, but it's like those that, you know, when you talk about energy or communicating without mm-hmm. a body or mm-hmm. in a body, it's like, oh, there's another one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I went to, I have a really, really hard time with the media anyway, so I just can't, I mean, like, it's really hard for me to, like, watch TV or just be in any way part of, like, I'm just really not very comfortable in the mm-hmm. in the world of like news, and so I kind of just like I just kind of tried to remove myself from it as mm-hmm. much as I could.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else? No right. There's no wrong answer. I'm just curious to get some communication going and just get some idea of where we're at.
My reaction was similar to yours. It was just like, you know, this is kind of predictable, sadly predictable.
Yeah, terrible.
Kind of a state of consciousness that's being acted out. And, mm-hmm. You know, it'll happen again, you know, and sad. Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Thank you. What about you, Shirley? What did you think about it?
I was having one of my bad times mm-hmm. that afternoon, and I think I slept through most of it.
Mm-hmm.
I barely heard it.
Mm-hmm. What about your thoughts about it? About the idea of 32 people?
I just sort of knew something was happening, but it wasn't really registering.
Mm-hmm. What was your thought about it?
Just sort of maybe with a sigh, remind myself I don't know what anything is for, and just
mm-hmm.
that's about as far as I can go with it right now.
Well, that's cool. And like I said, there's no wrong answer. But I was just curious.
Mm-hmm. I kind of had an issue about the fact that they were calling attention to the fact that he was a loner. Like, I just think that it's just programming. Like, it's all so, you know, like, the interpretation is just never, like, I'm not really allowed to have an experience, like, except by myself about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to join with,
mm-hmm.
any of my friends that were talking about it. Like, they were just like, yeah, it'll be the biggest one ever. And it's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's no, like,
yeah.
I'm just not even in the place to.
Yeah, it's like I had my victim reaction. I had a victim reaction, like, wow, they were just sitting there in the classroom and somebody came in, and I didn't want to pretend that away, trying to be spiritual. I'm really conscious of not trying to be spiritual, and not trying to be positive, because I think that I want to be truthful. And I want to be honest. I feel like positive thinking is one of the biggest disasters that ever happened to us, in the sense that most people use it as an excuse for denial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not truly being positive. They're just pretending that they don't feel what they feel, which is different from I'm being this way because that's the way I am. You see the difference? You know, it's different. Because if you're sweeping it under the rug, guess what? It's still under the rug. And so you're still going to get the result of that idea. Actually, it's going to sneak up on you and bite you in the butt faster because you're pretending that you don't even have the idea. At least if I can admit I got anger, I'm not shocked if I get a reflection of anger coming back to me from the world because it's a reflection of what's going on in me. But if I'm walking around pretending like I love everybody and I really haven't dealt with my subconscious fears and separations, then I'm going to meet that in my outer world. And then I'm going to be another one of those, why do good things, bad things happen to good people. I'm this nice person that's always something happening to. Well, the truth is, I have a lot of subconscious fear, separation, anger, and guilt that's unresolved within myself. And then that's being outpictured in my experience. So one of the major causes of sickness is rejection of feelings. It's a repression of anger, guilt, and grievances. And so you repress it, and then and it's a call for love. And that's how you let go of any guilt around having sickness or any kind of lack of peace. Well, it's just a call for love. Basically, it's I'm calling for love. And as long as I go there, I'll be okay. Because then I can let go of the guilt around not always feeling good. So I'm going to start with the paragraph that...
So, what you're saying, though, it's like I don't want to join with the big talk about it and the mm-hmm. big story about mm-hmm. it and all the thoughts and mm-hmm. you know the news and
mm-hmm.
so you're saying you sort of tell yourself the truth of how you're feeling.
Right. I go ahead and honestly have my reaction about it because I already have honestly had my reaction about it. See, what happens is we go ahead and we have our reaction. Then we come back and try to redefine the reaction. You know what I'm saying? So I can pretend that I didn't have that reaction, but the truth is there was a part of me, especially if you have children, you know, you immediately can identify with that. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't going to pretend that there wasn't a part of my human consciousness that didn't go, you know. But then I had to breathe. And then go ahead, because the truth is always behind the fear, you know. So if I go ahead and admit what I feel, then the truth always comes up after that. And the truth starts to tell me other ways to look at it. Like I was saying, you know, there is no death. The Son of God is free. They're not a body. They're free. You know, I don't know what their spiritual lessons are. I don't know what anything is for. I don't really know what the big picture is. You know, I can't judge that. Well, all I know is I want peace, and I want to be a giver and receiver of peace. That's all I know, is that I want to be in a place where I wouldn't attack. You know, and I can't judge the person, and I can't judge the victim, and I can't judge either one of them. But all I know is he had a call for help. You know, all I know is he was in his insane mind at that level. You know, there is no justification. I'm sorry. There is no justification for that at this level. At another level, I don't know. All I can do is take responsibility for how I act and what I do. And then I'm noticing that the more I do that, the more my outer world becomes peaceful. That's what I'm noticing. Is that the more I come from a peaceful space, the less I attract people to me that attack. And I used to have a lot more things that irritating people or people who would upset me or do things. And I know that's decreased. And it wasn't because I changed the world. So who changed? I changed. You know, I remember when I was the guy that complained about everything and everybody, that was the victim of everybody, that people was irritating me all day. And a good day, I'd get two or three fingers in traffic or whatever. You know, I remember all that stuff that I hear people around me talking about. But the only thing that changed in that whole equation was I changed the way I thought. That's what changed everything. I didn't change my mama, my daddy, nobody. And I watched my family change. I watched my friends change. I watched everybody around me change without me trying to change them. And when I was trying to change them, that's when I was having all kinds of challenges with them. But that's a personal, subjective experience. So when you say it to somebody who's still at the level of consciousness where it looks like people are always doing something to them, they think you're crazy and it doesn't make sense to them because they haven't had a chance to change their mind and then see a different change. So the paragraph that says, I'm just going to read through these first two paragraphs because I covered them in the previous class, but sort of to get us to where we're going to be today. It says, the world we see merely reflects our own internal frame of reference, the dominant ideas, wishes, and emotions in our minds. Dude, we could put that on a post in our house and we have it all. He says, perception makes projection, which means we look inside first, decide the kind of world we want to see, and then we project that world outside, making that the truth as we see it. We make the world we see the truth as we see it by our interpretations of what it is we're seeing. That means if we're using our perception to justify our mistakes, which is our anger, our impulses to attack, our lack of love, in whatever form it may take, he says, guess what? We see a world of people shooting each other up, which is a world of destruction, malice, envy, and despair. All this we must learn to forgive. So what happened the other day was something we must learn to forgive. Okay? He says, not because we're trying to be good. I love that. Not because we're trying to be charitable, because what we're seeing is not true. We have distorted the world by our twisted defenses, and therefore seeing what is not there. Here's a flip on that. Let's say that once you're out of the body, you no longer have to eat, you no longer can experience pain, and you no longer can have anything that causes you any lack of joy whatsoever because you're no longer in the body that goes through those things. All right? Then are we mourning them, or are they mourning us? You know what I'm saying? It's like if they went through was a zillion times better than where we think we are, then is it a tragedy? See, why is it a tragedy? Because I think they lost. I think that by them not being in this world, they lost. But what if I believe in my soul that what we really are beyond the body is beyond pain, beyond conflict, beyond hurt, beyond, which is everything the truth says it is, then the truth is they're in better shape now than they were before. They're in a safer place now than they were before. If that's true, then I need to forgive. In other words, if it's true, then I need to recognize that I'm making a perceptual error by looking at it as if they were victims and by looking at it as if they were destroyed. That's what the course would call forgiveness. Forgiveness would be me looking at it in terms of their reality instead of me looking at it from the perception of a human being that thinks it's a body that dies.
Mm-hmm. Or the shooter is the call for love.
Yeah.
Was it 30 students?
Yeah.
32. What a blessing that 32 people stood up and said, I will participate in this or teach you what, you know what I mean?
We don't, that's what I'm saying. There's so many other ways to look at it other than the way the world looks at it, which is what you're saying. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying there are other ways to look at things other than the way the media looks at things and the way that the media projects things. Because it's more like what you were saying earlier, Elizabeth, it's more like, it's almost like a feeding frenzy. It's like, oh God, we got something to focus on. And so every way possible, let me 10 times a day scare the hell out of you and remind you and take you deeper and deeper and deeper into fear and separation and distrust and make you afraid to walk on the campus and everything. Because from a spiritual perspective, that's what the ego does. The Course said it. The ego is a part of us that wants fear, and fear is what makes us feel separate. So there's a part of the mind that's invested in keeping us afraid all the time in order to keep the illusion going of separation and fear. So now the ego part of the mind is using this to take many people further into fear and further into separation and further away from love. So there's a bigger game going on than what appears to be happening on the surface, is what I'm saying. There's a much bigger game, and the game is fear and love. That's the only two games going on, and those are only two types of people in the world: those who are afraid and those who are in love. And they don't see each other, which is sad. But a person that's totally in love consciousness doesn't see fear, and a person that's in fear consciousness doesn't see love. They just see forms of fear. So all the fearful minds get together and feed on the fear, and all the loving minds get together and remind themselves of the truth, which is that these are unlimited beings who are not their bodies, who cannot be destroyed. And then they send light and love to the parents and the relatives who have genuinely feel the loss of that loved one. But they do it. But so there's another whole group of beings that's not pretending that this didn't happen, but they think it happened, which isn't spiritual either. You know, I'm a pretend. No, bury my head in the sand isn't being any more spiritual either. You know, it's really about me looking at it correctly, more so than me trying to pretend that it didn't happen. And that's what you have to watch when you start learning this stuff is an illusion and all that stuff, is that you don't get into lying to yourself where you're pretending that you believe it's an illusion, but you really don't. And that happens a lot. You can tell by how you react to the things that happen to you. Because it's easy for me to have a certain degree of detachment about somebody else's child. I don't have to be a spiritual giant to have peace about you wrecking your car. And then when you tell me about it, I go, oh, honey, it's just an illusion. It's just a car. It's not. And I just want to smack. That's my ego thought. I just want to smack people when they do that, because they're never doing it about themselves. Just watch the person that does that. You say what's going on, and they'll go, oh, it's just, you just lost your husband. No, it's just an illusion. They just want, don't worry about it. That just means something better is getting ready to come through the door. Okay, then can you say that when your child goes through this? Can you say that when it's your mate? Can you say that when it's you that's diagnosed with something that frightens you? Now you're a spiritual giant. But for you to be able to take a spiritual attitude about what I'm going through, that's why the Course, in a sense, recommends us doing it, and that's the paradox. It's like, since I am not as attached, I can go, I know you're sad right now, but in my heart, see you as stronger than what you're going through. But I'm not going to say to you stuff like, what'd you do to create that? And that's not really an illusion, that's just an illusion. Because that's a total sign of an unconscious person. The one who's the bliss ninny. Who can say all the little cute stuff as long as it's not them. But if they stub their toe, they tripping. You know what I'm saying? They come home and they see somebody just taking their flower pot off the porch that they like. They tripping. But they can look at your stuff and say, oh, it's just an illusion. So I try to check in with myself and go, okay, Earl, can you see it as a call for love when you go through something that appears to be pain? When your car is wrecked, can you see it as peace? If you really can, honestly not get upset about it, and it's okay if you do, then you can honestly say you're achieving that level of consciousness. But if I just say it about you, it's not saying I shouldn't see you as powerful. I'm not saying I shouldn't see you as not being the thing you're going through. But there's an attitudinal difference that I'm talking about. There's a difference between me not seeing what you're going through as real because I see you as a child of God, and me acting like you shouldn't have the emotional reaction that you're having to something.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
It's just being someone compassionate.
Yeah.
Somebody having a party. You know. It's like a,
afar.
Yeah. Now, you had your hand up.
I just kind of, as you were talking and talking about the event that happened, or even you being in church when you're 10 years old or whatever, that word control keeps popping up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to control where the media are, like feed on it, the feeding frenzy, mm-hmm. you know, or being in church and don't ask questions, that controlling. So in my mind, it's kind of like, be careful whether someone else is trying to control you or even I'm trying to control my own life
mm-hmm.
as things unfold and things happen or whatever. That controlling, to me, sounds like, you know, ego.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that outside or inside?
Outside.
Yeah, I did with love. You're amazing what you can do with love. It's amazing what you can do with love. It's amazing what you can do. I wish I had discovered love earlier in my life. Really, it's such a trip. If you mean it. If you don't mean it, then it don't go off too good. it's got to be coming from the heart, you know. Right? Okay, so he says, as we learn to recognize our perceptual errors, we also learn to look past them or forgive. At the same time, we are forgiving ourselves. I love that. At the same time, we are forgiving ourselves, looking past our distorted self-concepts to the self that God created in us and as us. That's what I was saying at the beginning. It's like, I like to take what we think of as real everyday situations and apply the truth to it. So I don't run away from the things in the world. I go through periods where I don't watch news and I don't watch TV and I don't do any of that. And then I go through other periods where I watch all of it. I don't have like a cut and dry rule that I'm not going to do it. It's like, I just let my inner self tell me. So, and that's what I'm learning how to do more and more. And that's what I encourage everybody that comes to my classes to do. It's about learning how to trust your own inner guidance and pay attention to what that says. So what I like to do is take whatever is going on and then apply it to the situation. So in my case, that would be, he says, at the same time, we're forgiving ourselves. And then he tells us what that means. Looking past our distorted self-concepts to the self that God created in us and as us. So to me, to forgive that would be to look past my distorted self-concept. What is that? That this is a body that was a victim that just got killed by somebody. That's what I learned. That's my distorted self-concept, right? Because I think that could happen to me too. Okay? Now, I'm going to forgive it. What does that mean? I'm going to look past that distorted self-concept, right, to the self that God created in them and ask them, and that's why I loop back to, I saw them as spiritual beings who will be more than their body. That's forgiving the situation. Forgiving the situation isn't me making what he did real and then trying to make myself overlook what he did. Forgiving the situation is remembering they aren't who they seem to be, and he wasn't who he seemed to be. And I'm not who I seem to be. Okay? That would be the Course in Miracles idea of forgiveness, going to the spiritual reality of who and what we really are. So then it says, sin is defined as a lack of love. Since love is all there is, sin in the sight of the Holy Spirit is a mistake to be corrected rather than an evil to be punished. I love that. It's a mistake to be corrected rather than an evil to be punished. Our sense of inadequacy, weakness, and incompletion comes from the strong investment in the scarcity principle which governs the whole world of illusions. From that point of view, then I go, well, what point of view is that? The point of view of the scarcity principle. We seek in others what we feel is wanting in ourselves. then you go, well, what does that mean? I seek in others what I'm wanting for myself. Well, we so-called love another person in order to get some love for ourselves. What does that mean? Well, that in fact is what passes for love in this dream world. There can be no greater mistake than that, because love is incapable of asking for anything. So what passes for love here is there's not enough love, and I'm going to get the love from you that I don't have, and you're going to get the love from me that you don't have, and then we're going to convince each other that we really have love because we're the ones that's giving it to each other. And not only that, we mustn't give it to anybody else because there's only 10 gallons. And I want your whole 10 gallons. You can't give none to nobody else. If you give some love to her, that's a paint low. So our concept of love is, what's the word? Untrue. There's another word that was more dynamic, but I couldn't get it out. It's just not true. But do we do it that way? Yes. Does that make it right? No. So I don't deny that that's what goes for love in this world. But that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it true. Okay? So that's where jealousy, insecurity, and murders on Saturday night a lot of times come from in relationships. Somebody else is getting my love. And so I love you so much, I'm going to shoot you and I'm going to shoot them. Why? Because I love you. And so I was like, please don't love me. Like, don't love me. You know, it's like I used to like want everybody to love me. It's like, no, I want the same people to fall in love with. Insane people falling in love with you is not a benefit. I don't know how to break it to you. An insane person falling in love with you is no benefit, because they attack out of their fear of lack. And so it's no fun having an insane person in love with you. You know. And so I always think about that when I'm saying I want people to love me. You know, it's like, let me qualify that, you know. I want real love to love me through people. I want to be loved through love. I want love to love me. Love, you come through whoever, I let you come through me. But I want the real deal. I don't want the phony stuff anymore. Has anybody else in here made that decision for themselves beside me? That you would rather have the real deal now than the fearful kind? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you have a Jennifer, but you know, I want the real deal now. It's the most unpopular concept in the Course of Miracles.
Well, it's interesting to find that you can find it through other sources than your traditional idea of love. Like, you can have the love like in this room, like you can have the experience of it
All of us can give each other, everybody in this room can let love come through each other right now. But the thing that we tend not to be able to let come through each other right now, and he's about to talk about that, is specialness. And so we got specialness and love confused. You know, all of us could experience love in here, but what we call love is specialness. So when most people think of love, they think of someone treating them special. So specialness is not equal. We don't give specialness equally. You know, at the specialness level, there are people who mean more to me than other people. Anybody don't have feelings like that? Anybody here gonna honestly tell me you feel the exact same way about everybody? Are you that deep in denial? Don't scare me now. Don't scare me now. Don't scare me like that by saying you love everybody the same. Okay, so that's when I get scared. So I've had people say that to me. You know, it's like, oh, come on now. You know you don't love everybody the same. Because you wouldn't go to bed tonight unless you thought everybody you knew was fed just like you. And you wouldn't go to sleep tonight unless you felt like everybody you knew had a roof over their head. You know, if you loved everybody the same, you'd be treating everybody just like you treat you. So you'd be just as much interested in somebody else eating as you eating. And I don't know anybody who passed that test. I don't. You know, so it's like part of the spiritual path is getting real. And that's what I try to do to make my classes different. And that don't work for some people and they never come back. You know, but, you know, it's like, oh, come on. You know, they'll say something, oh, come on. You know, doggone well, you don't care about my child as much as you care about yours. Don't sort of being say you love my child as much as you love your child. You know you don't. My child is not as special to you as your child. You're not bad. I'm not bad. I'm not condemning you. I'm just saying, let's get real. You know, so Love does, though. But we can't create love. We can't make love. We can't make ourselves love nobody. And so I gave up on that years ago. What you do is you get the blocks to love's presence out of the way so that the love that we already are can come through and do its thing. But, you know, I don't make the sunshine, but I sure can open the blinds and let it come through the room. You see what I'm saying? So when I hear people say they're going to make love, or they're trying to make themselves love everybody, and they're trying to make themselves, I always tell them, give yourself a break. You and I don't ever be able to make love. I love that term when I hear people say that. Let's make love. Like they're talking about a pudding. You know, or a pie. Let's go make some love. Okay, you know, let's go make, you know. Like, yeah, you can't. Let's allow some love. You know, let's let some love come through. But we can't make no love. And you really don't do well at making love, as a matter of fact. We need to talk about that. You know, so it's like, you know, we need to really talk about that, you know. So, anyway. Oh, I have to laugh. This is so deep, I have to laugh. It says our minds can only minds can really join. In whom God has joined, no man can put asunder. I love that line. It is, however, only at the level of Christ's mind, which we could say the real extension of love mind, that true union is possible and has, in fact, never been lost. The little eye, okay, everybody familiar with the little eye? Seeks to enhance itself by external approval, external possessions, and external love. The self that God created, what? Needs nothing. It is forever complete, safe, loved, and loving. It seeks to share rather than to get, to extend rather than to project. It has no needs, and it wants to join with others out of their mutual awareness of abundance. Now, these two paragraphs describes everything. Like, if you're coming from the regular point of view of the little I, he says, you feel inadequate, you feel weak, you feel incomplete. You believe that there's a scarcity of love. So what you do is seek in others what you feel is wanting in yourself, and you love another person in order to get something for yourself. Okay, he says that's the way the little I. The little I, or the ego, is trying to enhance itself by external approval, external possessions, and external love. So what the Course is doing is teaching us the difference between real love and fake love. And when I first heard that, I realized not only had I been giving fake love, that most of the people I knew were giving fake love. And the effect that had on me was it helped me forgive myself and everybody around me. It was just the opposite of what you think it would be. It would be like, oh, I didn't know anybody better. That's what I thought love was. And I really wasn't giving real love, but I thought I was. And they think they're giving it. And we both were afraid. And we're both trying to get ourselves filled up in the Spirit. So there's no need for me to condemn my friends and my parents and my past lovers and everything. We was doing the best we could from where we were. But I need to know the difference between the two so I'll stop hurting myself. So he says, okay, well, let me show you the difference between the two. Now, you're on a level of consciousness that now you need to go for another level of love. He says, well, what is that? He says, well, your real self, he says, first of all, as God created you, your real self needs nothing. Your real self is complete. Your real self is safe. Your real self is loved. Your real self is loving. Your real self wants to share. But your real self isn't trying to get. Your real self is extending. What does that mean? I'm seeing what I see in you as being a part of my own consciousness. I'm not projecting, which is saying I see qualities in you that's not in my own mind. He says my real self has no needs, and my real self wants to join with others out of a mutual awareness of abundance. So if I do want to have a relationship, I'm aware that there's nothing missing. But I just want to share my love with you, and we can just increase what we already have. See, that's different. That's different from me coming to you empty, saying, will you please fill me up? And I go, okay, I'll fill you up if you fill me up. And me coming to you saying, you know what? I'm pretty cool. I'm okay with myself, whether I'm in a special relationship or not. I feel pretty whole. I feel complete. So let's join to just increase that. You feel whole, I feel whole, let's share this good whole stuff we got. That's the kind of people I want to connect with in a relationship. But that comes from my real self. So my goal must be, how do I get rid of the blocks to knowing this self that was just described? Because I'm going to be honest with you and admit, I don't completely feel that way. So now I know what my job is. See, now all of a sudden I know what my task is. My task is not to try to give myself those qualities. My task is to realize I am those qualities, and I need to get rid of anything that keeps me from being aware that I am those qualities. So I'm seeking after what I already am, so I have to succeed. You know what I'm saying? It's like if I was covered with white paint, and the book said, well, under this white paint, you have brown skin. And I go, oh, that's not the thing, me going out saying, I have no brown skin, I'm going to go out here and get brown skin. That's the same as saying, I have no love, I'm not a loving person, so I'm going to go out here and do good, be good, convince myself I'm a loving person, and then I'll be a loving person. That's seeking on the outside. But it's different if I say, oh, under this white paint, I got brown skin. So what is my job? My job is to wash the white paint off, and while I still have the white paint, have some people around me telling me I got brown skin, because I don't see it. I've forgotten it. So they need to remind me that I don't look the way I think I look. And that's what we're supposed to do. All of you are loved, complete, safe, and loving. I'm making that decision about every single one of y'all. Y'all. Okay, that's Southern. Y'all. Okay. And anything else is just the white paint. And the job in a relationship is to help each other let go of the paint and recognize what's under it. That's just a little analogy to describe the whole process. You know, so let's make a decision that we're already cool, we're already powerful, we're already creative, we're already safe, we're already loved, but we might have ideas and thoughts and beliefs that make us think that we're not the white paint. So The Course in Miracles is a book in how to let go of the paint. Not put no glove in you. You are love. You are perfect. You are whole. And your ego is the conversation that you're having with yourself that tells you you're something else. Like people say, what is the ego? It's the conversation you're having with yourself all day that tells you anything other than that you are love. It's the conversation that says, Earl, you're a black man in America that's separate, that's out here on your own, and you got to make it, and that person might try to fool you, hurt you, mess you around. It's like, I almost had this conversation. And the ego is the conversation. That's your ego. It's your conversation. It's the conversation that's based on fear. That's the ego. It's not a separate entity. It doesn't have a life of its own. It doesn't make you do anything. It doesn't even exist. It's like me making a recording and then listening to the recording and then doing what the recording is saying. And then turn around and saying, the recording is making me do it. No, I made the recording. And now I'm listening to it. The recording I made was, Earl will never find a relationship that works for him. You know, the recording is, I can never have prosperity and abundance. I have to already struggle. See, I recorded it, and now I'm playing it back, but then I've gone crazy. So now I think the recording is actually independent of the recorder. You know what I'm saying? And that's what the Course is teaching us. That we made the recording, and we can change the recording, and we could just throw out the whole damn recorder. Or just don't cut it on no more. I like that analogy even better. Click! I don't have to destroy the recorder. I can just put the recorder up on the shelf. Okay, so I'm going to stop here. Do the love offering, and then do a quick review of the main thought to take out into the lab when we get ready to go out here. So our job is, when we're around friends and relatives talking about the tragedy, is to remember the truth of everyone involved. Remember the truth about everybody that was involved in that, which is they are spirit. And since you all are all pretty cute, people are listening to you. Pretty cute. You know. I always attack cute people in my class. I didn't notice that. I really didn't. I do. I attack the cutest people in my class. I have people that say it to me. You attack the cutest people in your class. I said, I know. I thought cute. That's a reflection of me. You know? Oh, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to remember what I need to learn and not forget. And thank you for loving yourself enough to want to come around somebody that's going to remind you that you're complete and safe and loved. You know, that says a lot about your consciousness. That says a lot about how much you love yourself to even do that. And next week, if you're reading this, read further, because the next wisdom we're going to talk about the special relationships. And then in the same section, it talks about how you transform it into what he calls a holy relationship. So when he says special relationships, he's not talking about it in the traditional way that most people think of it. It's not the course is not saying you cannot have a relationship with someone that is a one-on-one relationship with someone. The course says, I just want to get rid of the fear. I just want to get rid of the fear. I'm not trying to get rid of your relationships. I'm saying I want to get rid of the fear in your relationships. It also says, at the level of the body, we can't meet everybody. So there will be certain relationships that will be held out to us so that we can practice letting that safe, loving being come through. So contrary to it not being about you having relationships, it's really about you having relationships. And many people misperceive the course. They think the course is anti-special relationships, and you can't have a lover, you can't have a mate. It's got to be impersonal love just for everybody. And that's just another trick. How do you know it's a trick? Because you feel like something is being, you having to sacrifice something you want. And the minute you think you're being asked to sacrifice, you know that's your ego. That's how I keep my ego from fooling me. Earl, are you thinking you got to sacrifice something you want, but then you're not hearing it right? So when your ego does that too, you try not to fall for it, because the course never demands sacrifice. One of the rules of developing trust, he said, is keep what you do want, you know, give up what you don't want. That's the rule. That sounds cool to me. Keep it as long as I want it? Yeah, keep it as long as you want it. When do I give it up? When I want to. Oh, I can do that. What is the conflict? Trying to make myself give up something I don't want to. That's the conflict. So tomorrow night at 7, okay, so this is the thought I'd like you to take out with you today, that the self that God created, that is you, needs nothing, that you are forever complete, that you are forever safe, and that includes all the people that were just involved in this lesson, forever loved and forever loving, that what you want to do now in your relationships, you go, I want to share. I want to walk out of here today. I want to share. I'm not going out to get. I'm going to extend. I'm not going to be projecting on everybody. That my real self has no needs, and I really want to join with others out of our mutual awareness of abundance. So if you say right now you want a relationship, you would go, I want to join with another person out of our mutual awareness of abundance. That's the ultimate affirmation for a relationship or a friendship or even a boss, anybody. Okay? So are we claiming that we're whole? That even if we think we're something else, we're going to claim that that's our core underneath whatever we believe, and take that idea out into the rest of the week and the rest of the day. Thanks for being my teachers. Appreciate y'all. Thank you. Mm.